Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, attaining the supreme text number 2. Adi Jagna Katam Kotra.
Adi Jagna Katam Kotra.
Dehesmin Maru Sudana.
Dehesmin Maru Sudana.
Priyani Kali Chakatam. Yayosi Niyatatmavi. Adi Jagya, the Lord of Sacrifice. Katam, how? Kaha, who? Atra, here. Dehe, in the body. Asmin, this. Madhusudana, O Madhusudana. Priyanakale, at the time of death. Cha, and Katam, how? Yaya Asi, you can be known. Niyata Atmavi, by the self-control. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Who is the Lord of Sacrifice, and how does He live in the body? O Madhusudana. And how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? Purport. The Lord of Sacrifice may refer either to Indra or Vishnu. Vishnu is the chief of the primal demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. And Indra is the chief of the administrative demigods. Both Indra and Vishnu are worshipped by the yajna performances. But here Arjuna asks, who is actually the Lord of Yajna, sacrifice, and how the Lord is residing within the body of the living entity? Arjuna addresses the Lord as Madhusudana because Krishna once killed a demon named Madhu. Actually, these questions, which are the nature of doubts, should not have risen in the mind of Arjuna because Arjuna is a Krishna-conscious devotee. Therefore, these doubts are like demons. Since Krishna is so expert at killing demons, Arjuna here addresses him as Madhusudana, so that Krishna might kill the demoniac doubts that arise in Arjuna's mind. Now, the word prayana kali in this verse is very significant, because whatever we do in life will be tested at the time of death. Arjuna is very anxious to know of those who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness. What should be their position at the final moment? At the time of death, all the bodily functions are disrupted and the mind is not in a proper condition. Thus, disturbed by the bodily situation, one may not be able to remember the Supreme Lord. Maharaj Kulakshekhar, a great devotee, prays, my dear Lord, just now I am quite healthy, and it is better that I die immediately, so that the swan of my mind can seek entrance at the stem of your lotus feet. The metaphor is used because the swan, a bird of the water, takes pleasure in digging into the lotus flowers. Its sporting proclivity is to enter the lotus flower. Maharaj Kulakshekhar says to the Lord, now my mind is undisturbed and I am quite healthy. If I die immediately thinking of your lotus feet, then I am quite sure that my performance of your devotional service will become perfect. But if I have to wait for my natural death, then I do not know what will happen. Because at that time the bodily functions will be disrupted, and my throat will be choked up. I do not know whether I shall be able to chant your name. Better let me die immediately. Arjuna questions how a person can fix his mind on Krishna's lotus feet at such a time. Adi yagya katam kotra dehesmin madhusudana priyanakali chakatam yayosti niyatatmavi. Who is the Lord of Sacrifice and how does he live in the body? O Madhusudana. And how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? This chapter talks about death, everyone's favorite topic. People lining up to hear about death. But for a devotee, death is not as fearful as for a non-devotee. As a matter of fact, for a non-devotee, they have absolutely no idea what's going to happen at the time of death. Or they may have some idea, and it's usually wrong, that the good fairy will come and take them away somewhere, or they'll go into the ground and wait for someone to take their bones out of the ground or something. Or they're going to go up to some place where there's some big man sitting on his seat without any face, and he's going to check whether they have any sinful or pious activities and either throw them into the burning fire or give them a little harp or horn to play. So there are many conceptions, but none of them are very logical or fit together in a complete philosophy. Now, as we know from the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has given us a key to our philosophy, key to our own participation in our Krishna consciousness movement, namely that we're not this body. Now, because it's not exactly only a theoretical concept, because it actually stimulates our intelligence to see things properly through the clouds of our anarthas and aparads, we can see something through the cloud. Namely, that our body is changing, but we ourselves within the body, we're not changing. So though our consciousness is cloudy, but still, no one can deny the fact that we're eternal. Any sane person will not deny that. Although it's not within our normal experience, but still, it's intellectually we can perceive it, and it brings us closer to an actual experience by intellectually at least perceiving it. It cuts through the fog that we're in. We're kind of like if you ever had, previously when they gave operations, they used to use anesthesia. When I had my tonsils taken out, they put this thing on it was anesthesia, and you kind of just enter into like this dreamlike state. So that's what we're in right now. We're anesthetized by illusory energy. So we're not exactly completely asleep, but we're certainly not awake. Now, what awakening, why are we trying to come awake? Well, first of all, so we can become blissful and happy and aware of how to become blissful and happy eternally, which is inconceivable to us because we just don't know what it's like to be eternally happy. We do know what it's like to be eternally miserable, and it's pretty normal. We're comfortable. Not exactly comfortable. We wouldn't be here if we were completely comfortable. But we're kind of used to it. We don't expect too much more than what we're already experiencing. When we wake up in the morning, we don't expect to see the form of Shyama Sundar in our heart. We do expect some prasadam and a place to sleep. We do expect those things at least. And maybe we expect maybe to make a little event, get some little understanding, a little appreciation, something. Now, the question is, if at the time of death we can become so fixed on Krishna that somehow or another, miraculous, we're going to go back to the spiritual world. That's one extreme. That by the mercy of the spiritual master, he's so kind and merciful that although I don't follow very carefully in this lifetime because I'm just not able to, but still at the time of death, by some inconceivable mercy, some chariot will appear and take me back to the spiritual world. I couldn't airplane. And I don't want to spoil anyone's dream. But if that was true, then what are we doing here? In other words, how do we get here to participate in sadhana bhakti? If it was true that the spiritual master by nature is so merciful that although I have so many faults and so many misconceptions and so many material desires, miraculously at the time of death, Krishna is going to appear before me because I'm going to chant so sincerely that God is going to reveal himself. We may think like that, good luck. Because if Rupa Goswami says that devotional service is a continuum over many lifetimes. Of course, Prabhupada didn't emphasize that so much in his talks, because otherwise we're so impatient. If we found out, we wouldn't go back to Godhead automatically at the end of this life. We just give up. It's too much. If I can't become God conscious in another 15 minutes, then I can't, I'm too impatient. So Prabhupada would encourage us. Like one time he said, the devotees asked him, what percentage do you have to be in Krishna consciousness before you're eligible to go back to Godhead? And Prabhupada said 100%. And he looked at the devotees and they're all morose. And he said 90%. And he looked around, they're still all morose. So he said 70%. And they're still all morose. And then he said 60%. And he said, that's the bottom, I can't go any lower. But actually we should try to become as whatever percent we can. The main concern is that I'm going to leave this body and I'm going to forget who I am. As if we haven't forgot who we are already, that we're so worried about forgetting who we are. We don't even know who we are, how can we forget who we are? All we can forget is our dream. It's like you're dreaming at night and you wake up and you think, oh my God, I forgot my dream, and you try to go back to sleep because you're afraid I forgot my dream, my whole identity, and the dream has been lost. So similarly, we're dreaming, and we don't realize we're dreaming, so we're very attached to this dream. And the fact is that most conditioned souls never wake up. They just go from one dream to another, and therefore they don't even know that they're dreaming. Whatever dream they arrive at, they think it's real. That's all there is. But when one becomes a devotee and wakes up a little bit, then one can realize that actually if I lose this dream, at the worst I'll simply get another dream. Hopefully better than this dream. Better in the sense that if I'm practicing Krishna consciousness in this lifetime, then Krishna says I'll take up where I left off. Now, if we haven't done anything, there's not much to take up. If we haven't really made very much advancement, then we're kind of like starting from, plus one. So we should try to make some advancement in the time that we have left. So at least we get up to plus two or three. And that advancement will, as Krishna says, protect us from the greatest danger. Now we should know what advancement is. Generally speaking, advancement is to be able to remember Krishna. As much as we can consistently remember Krishna, then we're advancing. And the only way we can consistently remember Krishna in devotional service is to utilize things in Krishna's service. Because as soon as we utilize anything and we don't utilize in Krishna's service, then we forget Krishna. That's the way the material nature works. And as soon as we're doing anything sincerely under the guidance of Krishna's representatives, in order to please Krishna, then spontaneously we'll remember Krishna. That's why the chanting of the holy names is so important, because anyone who's chanting, they can't really expect to get very much out of it. Unless you're leading kirtan, and you think you're like Narada Muni in the heavenly planets when he was some demigod, Bahar something, Bahishmit, I forget his name. And he was singing. But he was singing in such a way as to attract all the demigoddesses. And Prabhupada interprets that in the purport as, I guess in the Bhagavatam, suddenly he was singing like rock songs or something. So we can sing like kirtan like that. That's one of my concerns about these these mantra festivals, what do they call them? Kirtan festivals? Is that what they call them? What's that? Kirtan melas. Because sometimes it turns into like a rock festival. You know, the devotees chanting, and the lady go, oh. You know, they're just, ah. And then they're dancing. And the men are going, ah, rah. You know, so Krishna is not even there, practically speaking. So that kind of, you know, that kind of chanting doesn't help us. But generally, chanting is such that you can't expect very much out of it except to become Krishna conscious. If that's what you're trying to do, is become Krishna conscious. If you're chanting japa, I never saw anyone chanting, all the ladies going, wow, I love the way you chant japa. Yes, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So it's a real test. It's a real, you don't get anything out of it except for Krishna consciousness. Or learning to stay awake. Get out of the ocean material, you know, distress. As they said, 16 rounds with the holy name, you know, and they have boxing. So the first round, you go out with the first round, is, and immediately Maya goes, whack! And you go, knocked out in the first round. Knockout punch by Maya. No, so the chanting, all we can do is try to do something for Krishna, to try to please him, chant it, and that means to chant attentively, and then try to chant feelingly, and try to, eventually, as Prabhupada said, try to feel Krishna's presence. So this is a great practice to prepare us. Because what stands between us and Krishna is all our material desires, which we're generally not aware of because we're just existing in them. But in japa, immediately, you know, they all come out. Like Prabhupada gives the example, when there's spring cleaning, during the winter, you're just putting all the dust underneath the rug because you're too lazy to sweep it up. And then during winter, during spring, you pick up the rug for spring cleaning, and all the dust starts flying everywhere. And where did all the dust come from? So we started chanting japa, and immediately, you know, my God, what's going on here? You know, I'm trying to concentrate. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Wow, I'm trying to, and it's getting worse. Should be the opposite. I'm trying to concentrate. Until one becomes resolved not to pay attention to the mind and just try to chant as best we can. And then we get puffed up and we think, yeah, look at how nicely I'm chanting. I'm just amazing, you know, listening to every mantra. And the mind goes, yeah, you're really fantastic. I'm even losing energy as you lose. I'm admiring you, you know. But you deserve something more than this Hare Krishna move. You're really special. Then, yeah, what do I want? Maya says, I'll give you anything you want. So it's a battle, but eventually, you know, and then you become a little, you know, you get some mercy from Krishna, you feel Krishna's presence, you feel a little ecstasy, and think, yeah, finally I'm recognized. Finally Krishna woke up. I'm on my way back to Godhead. And then, 5 minutes later, oh my God, where did all these thoughts come from? I thought I was a pure devotee. How could a pure devotee think like that? This is embarrassing. So we have to be prepared, we have to learn this philosophy, be prepared to try to make some advancement, utilize whatever time we have left in this body, and not be worried that somehow or another we're wasting our time. What we're trying to achieve is very simple, extremely simple, and therefore it's extremely difficult because we have so many other things we're trying to do in this lifetime. Mainly all centered around trying to survive in this body. and then when we try to survive in this body, try to help a few other people survive, and then get them to like our body. Actually, you have a nice body. Thank you. You just want a little attention. You want to survive and get a little attention, some appreciation. Therefore, if you go to, when we went to the airport, you want to stop someone, you just go, "Wow, look at those shoes." And people go, and you go, "Oh, my name's Phil." You know, and they go, "What? You know, he admired my shoes. Finally, someone saw my shoes." Because people in America, they have these, especially the cowboys, they have these shoes. You know, they have these boots made out of rattlesnake. And you go, "Rattlesnake." And they go, "Yeah, all right." Finally, someone realized, you know, you must have really studied your science of boots to know it was rattlesnake. They have rattlesnake and they have cobra. They have what else do they have? All kinds of animals. They have buffalo, deer, rabbit boots. Rabbit, yeah, rattle. You give them a book and then they go, "Yay, boy, this person knows my heart. He appreciates me. He's one of us. All right, man." So if you have a tattoo on your body, if someone walks with a tattoo, "Yeah, tattoo, yeah, right, all right, brother." So everyone just wants to be recognized, you know, they want to be part of some family where they're appreciated. "Yeah, all right, man, tattoo." Or but we're trying to avoid that, get away from that. Try to see everyone as in a different perspective. That we're supposed to learn how to become a servant of everyone and not try to like separate this idea that we're part of some special group. Because we are part of a special group. We're part of a special group. Try not to become a part of a special group. Trying to find out, you know, that everyone is part of a special group. Krishna's family, of course we can't jump that way, therefore we try to appreciate the devotees. We try to practice properly appreciating the devotees according to their level of advancement, and then gradually, as we become purified, then our appreciation can extend to the innocent, and then eventually we won't differentiate so much. We won't be affected by those who are against Krishna. Not that we'll want to associate with them, but we won't take them seriously. Because we'll see they're just crazy people, that's crazy souls. Therefore, we're just trying to prepare ourselves so the best we can at the time of leaving this body, as Krishna will go over, we'll try to think of Krishna at least. That we won't think of our pet poodle we left behind. That's why it's not good for devotees. I hope no one here has a dog. A lot of times in family life, no one appreciates you more than the dog. So if you're going to feel separated from anyone in the family, it might be the dog, which is very dangerous at the time of death. Unless you name your dog something like Krishna Das or something. "Krishna Das, help me." So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for your lecture. You mentioned the punches of Maya, and I was wondering, many times we hear the definition of Maya being our conception that anything is separate from Krishna. So sometimes I question my concept in this world, because many times we listen to, you know, like different cultures have different customs, and even, you know, you mentioned rattlesnake boots, but somehow, you know, even in Vaishnavism we worship Padukas. So I'm trying to see, you know, some spiritual concept behind worshipping shoes in like many, many different countries. I mean, not necessarily.
What do we worship shoes?
I mean, I don't know what's the concept because.
Well, everyone worships shoes. Just like if you have a little child, probably gives the example. If you have a child, now, and they have little booties, and you see the little booties, then automatically you remember your child and you feel some affection for the little booties. You know what booties are?
Yes.
Yeah, so boots. Then you feel some affection. Now, if you see any old shoes on the street, you don't feel any affection for it. But because the shoes are related to your child, therefore it's transferred that feeling from your child to the boots.
Yes.
So similarly, when things are in relation to a devotee or Krishna, if we feel some devotion towards the devotee, then we'll transfer it to the articles that help us remind us of the devotee. Mm-hmm. Of course, if we don't feel any affection, then they just appear like some shoes. Depends on our feelings.
Okay. And the second question I have is, we read in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is ability in man. So you're mentioning these rock concerts.
Yeah, Krishna is their ability too.
So there is also Krishna in these kirtans presence.
Yeah, Krishna is there, and for a rock concert, Krishna gives them the ability so they can go to hell. Without Krishna empowering them to go to hell, they can't go there.
Is it like with singing in the mood in kirtan? Is it the mood that's maybe sattvic, like classical or Carnatic music, or you know, rock and metal would be total tamas? Or
well, we have to take people where they're
like,
at.
Is it like musical styles that relate to different gunas? Or
well, there are styles that obviously Krishna wants. He likes. Now you go to the spiritual world, there's no Led Zeppelin there. You can't ask, you know, one of the gopis, you have a Led Zeppelin album, you know. I kind of miss him. No, but we got a, you know, Mick Jagger. All right. This is cool, I'll stay here.
How far did the Beatles come?
The Beatles. Yeah, yeah, there's plenty of Beatles. No, in the spiritual, Krishna likes certain music. Now, when we're preaching, not everyone likes Krishna's music. And therefore, sometimes when we're introducing new people, we may make the style of music, you know, appropriate for them, but not too far out. That the devotees, just like we have what's called bridge preaching, but bridges have two sides. So we don't want to have the bridge preaching, so we wind up on the other side. So we have to be a little careful that we don't go overboard.
Okay.
I remember Prithviprabhu was telling me, he was glorifying this in America. They have these, they had the rainbow gatherings, they were called.
Yes.
What's that?
The
rainbow gatherings. But at that time, you know, people didn't wear clothes. I don't know if they do that here.
They had this Burning Man concerts too.
So, you know, most of the people, at least it came to the point, especially in the earlier times, a couple of decades, people just didn't wear any clothes. So, all the brahmacharis used to go, yeah, let's go to the rainbow concerts. We make some devotees. Sure, they made a few and they lost a few.
Maybe they made some new ones.
Yeah, people got burned out, you know. Oh, yeah, who are you? Yeah. I was a devotee 15 years ago, but now I had enough. I think I'll come back. How did you get here? I was 15 years ago. I was at the first. I was at the first Rainbow concert with you all. So we have to be careful that, you know, we want to introduce a music which is attractive to the audience, but not keeps us in Krishna consciousness too. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Gandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.